white, black, brown, gay, straight, transgender, I don't care, whatever. But no matter who you are, if you say you're a conservative, you get shut down these days. And not even just shut down, but you get your canceled.
It is unfortunate how complicit the media has been pushing these crazy narratives.
Yeah, I mean, they're like accomplices in all of this.
The Mock and Daisy Common Sense Cast.
No one has common sense anymore.
Welcome to another episode of the Mock and Daisy Common Sense Cast. On today's episode, we are very, very excited to have with us one of our favorite people, Dinesh D'Souza, who has written lots and lots of books. Your most recent one is called The United States of Socialism. Did I get it right?
You got it right.
All right. And we had the pleasure of talking to you on our regular radio show the week before last, before we were on vacation. And we were talking about the Black Lives Matter movement and how this whole issue of race and all the tearing down of statues is a thing right now.
And the difference between Venezuelan socialism and Scandinavian socialism, and how a lot of people think, oh, we're going to do socialism because it's going to be different this time. It's going to be like Scandinavia, and how it's not going to be like that at all.
And then we got into a side conversation about the 1619 Project, which is about a year old now. And it was a whole New York Times commentary or issue or initiative from the New York Times where they decided to observe the 400th anniversary of the beginning of American slavery and make that the founding date of our nation instead of course, the 1776 date that we've all learned about since we were itty bitty.
Yeah.
And so now the writer of the main piece of commentary has won a Pulitzer for that work, even though, as you were pretty quick to point out last August, there are so many falsehoods in the entire piece. Walk us through some of that.
It's important to know, first of all, that a number of the leading historians of the American founding, Gordon Wood at Brown University, for example, James McPherson at Princeton, have denounced this project, have basically said it's kind of an intellectual fraud. But it's a fraud perpetrated for a reason. Now, the fraud itself, I think, is that it stampedes over all kinds of inconvenient facts. It's true. Slavery traces itself back to 1619. Now, there were very few slaves in America at that time. And in fact, their condition was not that different than indentured servants. One of the slave owners, by the way, dating back to those days, was a black guy. Mm-hmm. And so you have this sort of fragmentary slavery. Now, it began to grow. Remember when Thomas Jefferson wrote his denunciation of the British, he accused the king of having introduced slavery into the Americas against the will of the American people. And very interestingly, Jefferson was speaking not just for the North, but also for the South. Jefferson was implying, this is something that you embedded into American society. And to quote Jefferson himself, we have a wolf by the tail. We can neither securely hold him nor let him go. This gives you a little window into the way that Jefferson thought about slavery. A second point I would make is that the slave plantation, as we understand it, the massive network of slave plantations, cotton-growing plantations through the American South, did not develop until after Eli Whitney invented the cotton gin. This was in the 1790s, after the American founding. So the number of slaves at the time of the founding was about 500,000, but it increased to 4 million. It grew 8 times. And here's the important point. The growth of the slave plantation was paralleled by the growth of a political party, the Democratic Party, which became the protector of the slave plantation. So it is to hide this single devastating and inconvenient fact. The fact is that in 1860, the year before the Civil War, out of 4 million slaves in America, about a dozen were owned by border state Republicans, and all the others, or the vast, vast majority of the others, were owned by Democrats. So this is not the case where, you know, America did this or America did that. No, one party did it and the other party fought against them. And this very critical partisan divide over slavery is something that the whole 1619 Project, the whole Black Lives Matter enterprise is designed to camouflage.
Yeah.
And what's the end game?
Yeah, what are they trying to accomplish then? Because we know that the BLM movement is not really even about race as much as it is about, obviously, Marxism, which we talked about on our regular show. But what do you think the underlying motive is overall for, like, say, the 1619 Project?
Well, I think the underlying motive is the United States of Socialism. In other words, their goal is to take that autonomous zone in Seattle. I mean, what a miserable, wretched place. It reminds me of, you know, I haven't seen something like that since Slumdog Millionaire, right? You've got just people eating food off the ground. You've got people living in, yes, it's free housing, but it's like homeless tents. You've got no law and order. You've got, you know, they claim to be autonomous, but every day they issue a call for supplies. Surrounding capitalist infrastructure is the life support system of this autonomous zone.
Right, they need foreign aid.
My point is, all of America would look like that if you let BLM have its way. That's their end game. All this other stuff is an attempt to recast the narrative. Why? Because in order to discredit America, they have to discredit the ideals of the founding. They have to discredit American exceptionalism. They have to actually discredit the America that I came to this country to learn about and love and enjoy.
Yeah. And the thing that really breaks my heart, and I also find it terrifying, is that for the past, gosh, I don't know, 10, 20, it could be 30 years, they've taken our kids.
Yeah.
And in universities and even in public schools across America, they've taught kids, because we're seeing it, we're seeing the result of it. They've taught kids that America essentially sucks and that America has done all these horrible things, and all the things that you're saying that America has not done, they've taught the opposite. They've taught that America is this horrible place and that America is oppressive and that America is, you should hate America. And kids are doing that. Like we just put a bunch of stuff on our website in the past 2 days about, you know, with these, and it's mostly white suburban kids, really, that are saying, you know, I hate America. This is why on the 4th of July, they're putting out TikTok videos. They're putting out videos about how much they despise the country that they live in. And where do they learn this stuff? I mean, well, we can tell you. They learn it from their educators.
Learned shortly after the whole project came out. I was absolutely dismayed because my kid was starting his last year in middle school, and there was a language arts teacher who was already talking about incorporating some of the 1619 curriculum into the educational plan for the year. And I was mortified that was actually a part of the curriculum.
The taxpayer-funded curriculum.
You could say that academia is the theory and Antifa is the practice. I saw an article the other day saying it was highly ironic that these two Ivy League grads, one went to Fordham Law School, one went to Yale, were throwing Molotov cocktails in New York at the police. But the truth of it is, it's not ironic. It's actually to be expected. The more elite the college, in a way, the more the indoctrination that goes on. And the left has given political cover to the Democrats by pretending that on the surface, this is about Confederate statues. No, it's not about Confederate statues. It's actually about the principles of American exceptionalism. That's why they knocked down the Columbus Monument. By the way, they knocked down Columbus monuments in Venezuela. They obviously don't knock down Columbus monuments in Scandinavia. The only Scandinavian grievance with Columbus was that he wasn't Scandinavian. But the other thing about it is that they knock down Lincoln monuments and they go after abolitionist statues and they want to take down Ulysses S. Grant, the man who did more than anyone else to win the Civil War.
Right.
And the Christian saint who built the missions in California. And most recently, and kind of most tellingly, they knocked down the Frederick Douglass statue in Rochester, New York. Think about this.
Black Lives Matter,
like, really? This is a runaway slave, an abolitionist, the greatest Black American of our history. Why would you knock down his statue? Unless the fact that you hated, A, he was a Republican, B, he believed in the philosophy of self-help. He basically said, we should pull ourselves up by our own strength. And three, he ultimately fell in love with the American founding. He was initially a critic, but later he came to see, he said slavery was sort of the scaffolding to build this magnificent building, and the scaffolding is then taken down when the building is completed. What a beautiful expression of sort of American exceptionalism from America's greatest African-American.
Yeah, right. And along that line, what do you think about Black Republicans now who are speaking out against this kind of stuff and then getting shut down? Because there's a lot of that happening. There's a lot of conservatives out there, white and Black, any color, every color of the rainbow, right? Whoever you are, Republican, whether you are a white Republican or conservative, I should say conservative, not Republican, but white, Black, brown, gay, straight, transgender, I don't care, whatever. But no matter who you are, if you say you're a conservative, you get shut down these days. And not even just shut down, but you get get canceled, you get destroyed. I mean, they will seek you out and they will try to destroy you just for saying how you feel about this stuff if you go against the groupthink. That is concerning because we've never seen it at this level because we've been doing this, what, for 12 years? Mm-hmm. And I've never seen it so blatant, where people will just seek you out and destroy you.
Yeah. And part of that is social media's impact.
There's an effort to use all means at the left's disposal. They will confront you as you're going into church. They will call you the company you work for to complain about you. They will complain. Some writer at BuzzFeed will complain to Twitter to get you banned. So this is a level of intolerance that jeopardizes our free speech rights, our rights to religious freedom. I mean, it's important to remember that these basic liberties are not up for majority referendum. We haven't even said, hey, if 51% of people say, Dinesh, you know, you have to be a Mormon, I have to be a Mormon. No, my religious freedom has never been put up for democratic referendum. It doesn't matter if 99% of people think one way, I'm allowed to think the other way. So think of what an affront this is. And it also shows you how socialism ultimately here is not just about economic confiscation. It's ultimately about trampling on your civil liberties and trampling on your heart. Orwell saw this. He saw that ultimately a boot stamping on a human face, that's the image of socialism.
Yeah, it kills me because I see, you know, when you do see a black conservative say, yeah, I don't agree with that. And they're like, you don't get to say that you don't agree with that, that people can't see that. You know what? As a black person can say, I choose to be a Republican. And when people like, I think it's Snoop Dogg just came out over the past couple of days, they came out with that horrible list of black people that are, you know, conservative, and they basically squelch their opinions about things. People can't see that that is so un-American. It's so unbelievably un-American to do that. And I can't believe people can't see that.
Well, and it's such a paradox, too, because these same people that are trying to convince everybody to hate their own country want bigger government. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, if you hate the system of government that we have so much, why are you trying to grow it to leaps and bounds beyond where it is right now?
Precisely.
It doesn't make any sense to me. Mm-hmm. What do you think? Because now the conversation, it used to be even 2 years ago that when you would hear a conversation about reparations, for example, most people, even black Americans, even President Obama, when he was still in office, just dismissed that outright and said that's not something that we're interested in. It's not something that's ever going to happen. I feel like there's so much talk about that now.
I think it would happen.
Yeah.
If Biden were elected.
I just, as a result of the 1619 project, it seems like there's been more of an appetite for it. I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah.
Well, I think this is part of the scheme of the Democratic left to keep blacks, you may say, on the Democratic plantation. That's really all it's about. It's not an honest argument, because let's follow the argument. Okay, if someone honestly were to say, listen, all my wealth is the result of this country, let's just say, being taken by force. And therefore, I am living on stolen land. I am benefiting, my white privilege is due to stolen labor. And I don't deserve what I have. My answer is excellent. Why don't you give it all back? Why don't you vacate the land, go back to where your ancestors came from? In other words, undo the evil effects of the deed that I'm not saying is evil, you're saying is evil. So respect your own convictions and follow through. But then immediately the guy on the left laughs, goes, ha, 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 that's absolutely ridiculous. In other words, it hasn't even occurred to him. He's basically saying he's in possession of stolen goods. It's kind of like saying, you know, we the Nazis stole the art of the Jews and it's now hanging in our homes. And we're like, okay, we'll give it back. Why should we give it back? Where do you get that crazy idea, Dinesh? You know, so we're dealing here with a certain level of unseriousness from the point of view of moral reasoning. But that's not their goal. Their goal is not to give America back to the Indians. Their real goal is to ultimately make it such that their concept of America, it's not even that they hate America. They like the America of abortion on demand. They like the America of anything goes, of transgender bathrooms, of identity politics.
Yep.
So there's a certain America they love. They just want to make it difficult for us to live in that America. They want us to submit to them. We won't do it. They won't submit to us. This is why, to some degree, we have to say we are right now, much as we may regret it, the divided states of America.
Yeah.
Well, even the author, Cole Hannah Jones, I think is the 1619 author's name.
Yes.
I mean, even when she, I think she wrote like a recent piece about reparations and said, you know, it's time for reparations. And it's not like Americans are going to have to pay for it. It's the government. And I was like, how is anyone taking this woman seriously?
Yeah, and how does she win a Pulitzer?
Right. Like, how do the Pulitzers were given out?
Like, I mean, it's like with Nobel Prize. With an order of shrimp tacos, somebody gets a Pulitzer. It's like,
it's just
for real.
Amazing. It's absolutely amazing how much has changed, especially when we, you know, as Amy Jo referenced earlier, with these young people that we're seeing on TikTok saying the most horrible things on the 4th of July
about
their own country.
About their country as they're on boats, literally being free.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And taking that for granted and not even understanding what that holiday, they don't even know. If you ask them, what is Independence Day? They would not be able to tell you. But then they're just saying the most vile things about their country. It just makes me...
It
makes
hurts
me,
our heart.
It does. It makes
really
me
does.
Sick, and it also hurts my heart.
So I'm going to put you on the spot. Give us something positive. Like, do you feel any sense of optimism about any of this?
Because you are, you know, you probably travel a lot around the country, talk to a lot of people, and, you know, what do you think is going to happen in 2020? Do you see any... Is there positive stuff that you see happening? Like, because it's been a crap year, Dinesh.
Well, the positive thing, I think, is that the other side has, you might say, fully come out of the closet. And what I mean by this is it has completely played its hand. It has shown where it wants to take us and what it wants to do to us. I mean, look at New York City. 500,000 people have left New York City in the last month alone.
Wow.
Is that right?
In the last month?
They've taken a livable city and made it an unlivable city. And they have done it. This is what they would do to all of us and do to America. They will bring this to the suburbs as quickly as they can. And so I think that this is actually good because the ordinary American lives in a fog, you know, and doesn't follow politics until the last minute and sometimes doesn't vote unless it's raining. But the reason for that is that by and large, the country stumbles along, even if there's a little craziness that's going on. People have to see that this is going to come home to them if they don't get involved. And I think that message is getting out, even though there's a massive media suppression campaign to not show these images and to shift the blame. And you can see even at these Antifa things, while they're breaking things, they'll shout at reporters, don't film us, only film the cops. In other words, CNN, move the camera, which of course CNN is very happy to do.
Yeah.
In the same way, whenever they run into 10 black guys at a Trump rally, they quickly turn the camera off because it doesn't go with their narrative.
The
good news is we're on to them. You know, in the old days, we'd say things like, oh, CNN, you're so biased. We would appeal to some standard of objectivity that we now know those people don't even espouse. So it's silly to play the old games that come out of the Reagan era. We sort of recognize that all of this is now there's a certain moral clarity about it, which I like because it forces people to make a choice of what kind of America they want to live in.
Yeah.
And hopefully they make the right choice because it is unfortunate how complicit the media has been pushing these crazy narratives.
Yeah. I mean, they're like accomplices in all of this.
Is it surprising to you just how bad they've become?
Yes, because normally I would have thought they would maintain a certain professional dedication to the idea of both sides. Remember the old CNN, it was left wing, but they still had crossfire. You could see Michael Kinsley on the left and Robert Novak on the right. And so people got a glimpse of what each side thought. And journalists thought it was their job to at least showcase that, even if they ended it. And the same, when I was at Dartmouth as an undergraduate, the school was left wing in general, but there were prominent conservatives on the faculty. You were allowed to speak out. We were a minority, but we were heard. This notion that you should run people off the campus and stampede them and audit academic papers for racism and try to get people fired, this is a certain kind of hooliganism. And it's a hooliganism in high places because even Antifa and these groups would not be able to do what they did if they weren't protected by the mayor. And if when they were arrested, bail attorneys didn't magically show up. And even when they show up to throw things, bricks are magically placed at a street intersections, you know, and you have to pick up the brick and look really carefully at the bottom to see, you know, paid for by George Soros. Well, I don't know if it actually says that, but, you know, that's the idea that somebody is strategically delivering even the tools of revolution.
When it comes to these publicly funded universities, and since they are so liberal, faculty heavy, what can we do about that? Is there any, do we have any recourse, like as parents? Because, you know, we help pay for these universities for our kids. I've already put two kids through school, and I've got one more. I got a 10-year-old that I got to get through school, right? So I don't want her going to a school where it's just all liberal professors. I don't want that, because I've already seen a lot of our friends. Now, we have two older kids that are, they're both conservative. They made it out and they're both conservative. But I have friends, we have lots of friends who have sent their kids to university and they were conservative going in, they came out liberal. Yeah. We've heard a lot of people that, and it's because of the university professors. My question is, how, what do we do? Can we do something to, since they are publicly funded, to say, listen, this isn't okay. Like, if there's such an imbalance, can we help restore balance in these universities? And how do parents get involved in doing that?
In my view, the only way, in the sort of larger sense, is for our side to create a new university delivery system, a sort of high quality online delivery system that is of Ivy League level, but costs 1/10 of the price of an Ivy League institution. Okay. This way, it's kind of like inventing the academic iPhone and making all rotary phones obsolete. This is the only way, because we're not going to take back 300 universities, and the state legislature is not going to be able to oversee who universities hire. These are all clumsy tools to try to achieve a good result. But the truth is, the universities are self-perpetuating. They hire people who think exactly alike.
Yep. Yeah.
Now, in the short term, we have no choice but to send our kids to the best schools. We have to try to kind of navigate them through, which is kind of what I did with my daughter, kind of help shepherd her through the institution, picking the isolated professors who basically had their heads screwed on right. This is a difficult task, so it's not going to be the normal solution. The normal solution is ultimately to make the existing product obsolete. Same solution. Yeah. With the media. We're not going to be able to sort of straighten out CNN or the New York Times. We basically have to sink those ships.
Yeah.
So when are you starting this university?
Yeah. When are you? When are you starting it?
Well, I have a lot of ideas along these lines, but it's a difficult thing to do. Part of the reason it's difficult is because of the accreditation process. These universities are very old institutions. They've marched through a kind of ancient. So it's not easy to start new universities and have them accredited, but it is doable. And I think it's going to happen. It's just a matter of who does it and who makes it work. You know, it's too bad for us, for example, that most of these digital platforms are controlled by the left, and you have to give them a little bit of credit. They started them, but they started Facebook, they started Twitter, they started Instagram. And so to some degree, we've got to ask, why aren't we doing these things? Why aren't we building these platforms?
Totally.
I think ultimately this is the best alternative to secession. It is to create ultimately inside of the United States of America, you could call it the real United States of America.
Yeah.
And so that we have a world that we have to protect and in which we can flourish. And then all we have to do is resist their assaults on our world.
It's like the university answer to Parler.
Right.
You know, we need, that's what we need.
Yeah.
We need more
and
choices.
It's interesting. Have you by any chance talked to Dr. Jordan Peterson about this whole idea of starting an online university? Because I know that that was something that he's talked about before, too. You two would be a formidable force.
Oh, my gosh. Like, listen, my kid is 10, so do it quick, because this would be amazing.
It's a very exciting idea, and essentially it needs a marriage of two things. It needs a marriage of a world-class constellation of faculty that are married to a bunch of guys who are willing to put some serious money into it. Because a university is a big deal. You know, these universities have massive endowments. Now, the good thing about online is you can deliver these services at a pretty reasonable price. But on the other hand, it does involve creating an infrastructure. It does involve creating these platforms and delivery systems. And it's going to take some time to compete with, particularly with the universities at the top end. So you begin by competing with the universities at the middle end, and then your product gets better, and you're able to compete with the universities at the top end.
Sounds like a fantastic idea, right?
That's how I wanted to end this podcast, is with some optimism,
some hope,
some positivity.
Hope is good, right? Yeah.
Dinesh, as always, it's fantastic to talk to you.
So wonderful.
And we'll definitely have you back for further discussions. What's next for you? What projects are next for you?
I'm about to release a month from now a film called Trump Card. Now, the film is based on the book United States of Socialism. The book is sort of the intellectual spine for the movie. But I think that the election is going to be fought over this large, colossal, interesting figure, Trump, who dominates the debate. And I think ultimately it's Trump's election to lose. By and large, the people who vote for him are for him. And the people who vote for Biden are the people who are going to be against Trump. So yeah. Biden is a little bit of a non-entity. He's sort of a ghost. And at this point, it's a little difficult if there even is a Joe Biden who is sort of with us. But there is a Trump. And so Trump Card, the movie coming out in theaters August 7th.
Fantastic. Awesome. Well, we look forward. Your movies are always awesome. Always so awesome. Looking forward to that. Thank you so much. We really appreciate it.
Bye. It was really fun. Thanks, guys.
Oh, it's always so good to talk to Dinesh D'Souza.
I know, he's so awesome.
So awesome. And also awesome are the people that take the time not just to subscribe to the Mock and Daisy Common Sense
and listen.
Cast and listen to the podcast, but to actually leave ratings and reviews on the iTunes podcast platform.
Type the things.
They have to go to the thing. They got to write the thing.
They have to write it.
They got to submit it.
They got to click a button to send it.
They got to pick how many stars.
That is commitment right there.
That's serious
That's
commitment.
That's more commitment than a lot of ex-boyfriends I've had. I'm just saying.
And we appreciate the heck out of it. Uh-huh. We appreciate this review that we got that says, first, you have the infectious laugh of Macarino. That should be enough. But she brings with her the sultry and very sexy voice of Daisy.
Hey, what's up there?
They say nothing but common sense. I love it and miss it in our country and the rest of the world very much. I have two complaints. The show should be a minimum 3 hours and should be on daily with Sundays off for family and God.
We will love you long time.
And they finish it off by saying, get to it, girls. We've got another one from Hey Man Man.
Hey Man Man.
Have been listening since your commencement on the radio. Am a bigger fan each day. Love how open you are and supportive of our great country and the rule of law. Adore Rob, the super producer, and I'm addicted to you like I am to Rush Limbaugh. Never ashamed. Always free. And by the way, producer Rob is on our regular daily radio show on WIBC.
He's no Valen. He's not even like an ape as cute as Valen.
That's true.
Y'all have never seen Valen, but she's cute.
Lady Beth 89 says, I've been listening to both your podcasts for a few years now. I'm a teacher in Florida, and I relate to so much of what you talk about. Mock, I love your laugh, and it makes me smile. Daisy, I love your cool logic. I have liberal friends, and while they know what I believe, I'm one of those silent conservatives. I don't post a lot because
God
I do have some fear of blowback.
Right?
Your podcasts have really encouraged me to show my support and pride of our president and country. I'm not a fan of masks, but my county just made them mandatory, so my parents and I ordered Trump 2020 bandanas. Took a picture of it and posted it on Facebook. I will be wearing it in public. No fear, no shame.
God bless her, and she's a teacher.
I love that. I love
God
that.
God bless her.
We've got one from Huey268 who says, loved your show with Zuby. That's what the one we did right before vacation.
Yeah. Love Zuby.
If you were Parmesan cheese, I'd use the whole container.
Oh my God, I love it. It's so great. We'd be a big pile of it.
And the last one from Lindsay775. I'm a single mom to a little 5-month-old. He's my first, and I have no idea what I'm doing.
Listen, I totally feel you. I have a 10-year-old. I still have no idea what I'm doing.
I'm very conservative and never imagined doing this alone. I wouldn't say it was a mistake because my son is my world and I am pro-life. I love, love hearing y'all talk about your own families and the challenges of raising children in the social media, political craziness, and lack of moral world we seem to be living in.
Girl, it's okay. None of us know what we're doing.
We have no idea.
You just love them. That's all you got to do.
It gives me a great deal of hope that with what my parents have instilled in me, that my son will be good. If I teach him great values to love his neighbors, don't judge book by a cover, and that faith is some of the most important values and ethics, I'll be okay. Thank you for giving this mama hope. Keep up the great work. Be sure to subscribe if you haven't already.
Yes, you guys. So sweet. Until next week.
Bye.
Bye.